a familiar columnist today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Jennifer Ewald's columns on rural issues are well known. We'll get to know her better today on Scribble.
Jennifer, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
It's wonderful to meet you because I've been reading you for a long time, but what I really enjoy is listening to my wife read you because she's from a 200-acre farm in southern Minnesota. She has no intense interest in farming, but she did enjoy growing up on the farm, and so her responses to your column are, you know... Back then, it was possible to make a living on a 200-acre farm. Now,
yeah.
You can't.
I don't think that's possible
you
anymore.
You can't do it at all. So you have a day job, too, in addition to farming, right?
I do have a day job. I'm a full-time veterinarian.
Okay.
I have a clinic, Scott County Animal Hospital, up in Eldridge.
Okay. But you do farm, too, right?
Yes, I do help on the farm quite a bit.
Jennifer, how did you... How'd you get started in this? Are you from here, or are you from another area?
I'm not from here at all, actually. My husband likes to tell people that he married an alien. I'm actually from eastern Canada.
Wow. That's interesting country.
It is.
Were you in farming up there?
I was not, also, strangely enough. I lived in the suburbs and always wanted to be from a farm, but never actually lived on one.
Well, so you made up for it.
Yeah, indeed.
Did you decide to become a vet before you ended up on a farm?
I did, yes. I've wanted to be a veterinarian pretty much since I was about 8 years
old.
Okay. Yeah. And actually, that's part of the reason I ended up coming to the States was I did a internship after vet school in Iowa, and while I was here, I met my husband.
Okay.
Did you study veterinary medicine in Canada?
I did, yes.
And you just came to Iowa for extra schooling?
Correct.
Uh-huh.
I think it was meant to be for 1 year, and now I'm still here.
Well, that's the way it goes, isn't it?
Indeed.
But when you get into rural issues, I mean, what prompted you to start writing?
I get that question a lot. Really? In about 2009, it seemed that there was an awful lot of very negative press about farming and agriculture. It was just bad coincidence. A lot of things were happening at that time. And I was getting very frustrated sitting there and listening to the news sort of say endless streams of negative things about farmers and farming. And one day I looked at my husband across the dinner table and I said, "So who's standing up for farmers and agriculture? You know, who's telling the good stories about what farmers do?" And he kind of looked at me and he said, "Well, maybe you should." And that's kind of how it got started.
So you approached the newspaper?
I did. I just randomly sent a couple of samples of writing to the local editor at the Quad City Times. And I said, "Would you be interested in something like this for the paper?" And he came back with the comment of, "Well, how does every other Monday sound?" And I, with no other prompting,
right.
I was shocked. I really wasn't expecting them to be interested,
well,
but
they were. There really isn't, I think, a need for one in this area. Most of people my age grew up, if they didn't grow up on a farm, they grew up on the edge of farming.
Mm,
right?
You.
I detasseled
mm-hmm.
corn when I was little.
Yeah.
I pulled mustard for, I think, a nickel for 25 or something like
oh
that. Went through the field with people and,
yeah.
And you know, visited cousins on the farm. My favorite sound is still waking up early in the morning and hearing Johnny Putt-Putt out in the field.
Yeah, you don't hear that very much anymore.
I loved the Johnny Putt-Putt because it sounded like it needed help.
They do. I love that sound too, though.
Yeah, it's just haunting.
But I think, you know, as time goes on, you know, there are a lot of people that did grow up on farms or their grandparents had farms, but nowadays we make up such a small percentage of the population. Most people are completely out of touch with what happens on a farm on a day-to-day basis. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I cringed a little when Don said the word issues, because you don't sound like you have issues. You have concerns. Your column is not preachy.
No, I actually make a point of not. I mean, it's meant to just tell what we're doing. And I actually try to stay away from a lot of issues or things that
not in an issue like way. I think.
Right.
I mean, it's more what's happening this week on the farm. Time to get the tractor out. And so you really give to people that have no sense of the passing of seasons, a sense that life is cyclical.
It's very cyclical on a farm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, your background was veterinary medicine, and a farm is more than animals. So how did you get into all aspects of farming? Was it by doing or by watching?
A little bit of both, I would say. I went to an ag school for my undergrad, and so I did learn a lot there about all the different types of farming. And I went, you know, visited a number of my classmates, spent some time on their farms, learned how they did things. And I did work on several farms as summer jobs. I worked on a dairy farm. I worked on a potato farm. You know, I got lots of exposure to different things over the years, and sort of gave me a well-rounded exposure that I hadn't had growing up. And now, of course, I get it on a daily basis.
Well, you know, you said you read a lot of negative things about agriculture. What were some of the things that really stirred you to the point that you were ready to take action?
Well, I think, if I remember correctly, at the time, there were several stories about, I think it was down animals at slaughter plants, and there were several things that were very animal welfare related. But there was also a lot of negative press about how farmers are destroying the environment and causing all sorts of damage. I don't remember the specifics anymore. It's been quite a while. But those were kind of two of the main things that I do remember.
But we still have a problem with agricultural runoff, don't we?
Yes and no, but it is getting significantly better than it was. There's a lot more attention paid to water quality and protecting the waters in this area. And I think farmers are voluntarily doing a lot of things to improve water quality and reduce the amount of chemicals, fertilizer that's getting used, you know, using a lot of techniques in farming that protect the soil and avoid runoff so that we are reducing those problems.
What do you do about seeds that are adapted for a pesticide? They're more and more we have things in relation to each other. How does one deal with that?
In the sense of like growing GMO crops,
yeah.
Are you talking?
Or like dicamba, which I guess is the current
that's the latest
nasty.
One. I mean, the key with, you know, from my viewpoint, GMO crops allow us to use significantly less chemicals. They allow us to use less insecticides. They allow us in oftentimes to use less fertilizers. So we're actually adding less to the environment than we used to. We're also burning significantly less diesel fuel by not going out and tilling three times before and during and after we plant. So we're saving in that sense as well. You know, people will argue back and forth on GMO crops indefinitely, and I'm sure it will continue, but I feel like it does actually benefit the environment in many ways.
Well, it's not as if we aren't modified anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, nature modifies
Indeed.
Yeah, and I'm so full
plants
of plants
here, I mean, all the time.
Yeah, well, right? It used to take 50 years. I mean, I grew up with a father who worked for the Department of Agriculture, and one of the guys in his office was a wheat breeder, and he spent a lifetime trying to breed wheat varieties, and now they'll do it in a lab in a year. You know, I mean, the advancement that can be made in a short period of time is incredible.
I should tell you that you're talking to a farm page editor here.
Excellent. This is good.
Many years ago, I was helping out with a Catholic Messenger, and rural Catholicism got to be a big thing, so the editor said, we need a farm page. I said, well, where do you get one? He says, well, you're going to do it. So I would search through things about agriculture and so on and put them in the page. He says, well, you need a column. I said, I don't know anything about this. He said, well, learn. So I developed a style of stating a column and explaining the parts of it and winding up by saying, yes, we have a we have a problem. And he used to call me Cal Spreader, but that was my adventure with farming. But do newspapers not pay that much direct attention to agriculture?
Not as much as they used to, I don't think. You know, because, well, like I said before, you know, the general public doesn't pay as much attention because they're not involved in farming. You know, like I'm the only person at my office that pays attention to the new news that's talking about the price of corn and soybeans. I can guarantee you that. And, you know, it's very important to me, but to the rest of them, it's just another news bite. But in newspapers, yeah, I mean, a lot of the times they point out things that are going wrong or are a problem, as opposed to pointing out the things that farmers are doing right. Or the things that advances that are being made, you know. I don't feel like there's a lot of coverage about farming in newspapers and on the news these days in general. But when there is, it often tends to be negative.
Well, isn't that the nature of news, though?
True, true.
It's, if it's in the newspaper, something is wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is absolutely true, and we forget this. You go into a supermarket and there are all those things in cans and packages and plastics and so on. You don't think of what it takes to get there. But the doleful aspect of it for many people is the fact that there are no longer family farms or corporate farming.
Well, I would argue that point.
Good. Please do. Tell me about it.
Well, I mean, the numbers that you would read, wherever you're reading them, will tell you that 95 to 98% of farms are still family farms.
That's amazing.
The important thing to realize is that a lot of us have had to incorporate or become an LLC or something like that for legal protection purposes. Like, my husband Rob and I are the only people that work on, besides our kids, work on our farm. We are an LLC, and we did that because we were advised by our lawyer and our insurance agent that we should go ahead and do that. And it gives us added protection from somebody that wants to sue us for something. And a lot of family farms now are actually businesses in that sense, but they're still family farms.
What is the advantage of being a limited license, LLC, limited liability corporation?
Well, it prevents someone from taking you to court and taking away your home, for example. If the business owns the farm and you own your house personally, you know, you can't lose everything, for example.
Oh.
There are some protections in the courts for your business separate from your farm or your home. But also, I mean, there's tax implications. There's a lot of other business implications, accounting implications that, you know, force farmers into those sort of situations where you have to actually become a business, because that's what we really are, and legally become a business. So just because we are a business doesn't mean we're not a family farm.
Well, it's a family business now.
Right. Well, yeah.
But, you know, you hear stories, particularly when we went through this crazy business of raising tariffs, and China retaliated and so on, and you found so much turmoil in the agricultural community over what this was doing to farmers.
Mm-hmm.
How bad was that?
It's pretty bad. I won't lie. You know, our markets dropped like a stone. The prices that we were going to receive for our crops or our livestock dropped dramatically. And it's really hard to make a plan if you don't know that the crop you're planting is going to be worth anything when it grows, if it grows, because that's always a question. But, yeah, I mean, if you don't have a market to sell your crop to, it makes it very hard to grow a crop and have a business that is viable.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to come back a little bit to the attitude toward animals on the farm, because that was one of the problems that you mentioned back there. PETA and others are opposed to the awful treatment that animals get on the farm. And I thought of my wife growing up on a farm and being given a calf to raise for the county fair and hopefully maybe even the state fair, giving that calf a name, Lucille, and taking care of it and petting it and having it follow around and then go off and sell it for hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
How can you do that?
Well, it's a mindset, and I won't lie. Some of the 4-H kids do get very emotional at the end when it's time to send their animal to
market. But
they
don't seem to show it. I mean, but
they
do.
Well,
some
of them do. You got to see backstage at the fair. Yeah, there's some tears on that day. But I think the thing is, as farmers, we don't necessarily get emotionally attached to our livestock. We still care for them greatly and take care of them. And, you know, honestly, I'd like to come back in my next life as a beef cow, because who wouldn't want to just hang out on pasture and eat and graze and relax all day? I mean, that's awesome. But I don't feel like our animals are mistreated in any way. You know, they have all the food they want to eat. They're in, well, for pigs, for example, they're in a temperature-controlled barn 365 days a year. They've got food. They've got water.
Fed by people who have to wear masks to go
yeah,
in.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Fed by people that, yeah. But they're very much cared for. We work hard to keep all of our animals very healthy. Animals do not grow well or produce well if they're not taken care of. So it makes economic sense for farmers to take excellent care of their animals. And I feel like we do. I feel like there's been a lot of changes in the last, let's say, 25 years as far as animal handling goes. You know, we don't handle animals the way they used to. There's a lot of very animal welfare-oriented changes, even in slaughter plants, even in truck transportation of these animals. A lot of things have changed to make it a lot different from 50 years ago, way back when. And I feel like the animals are less stressed now. They're better cared for. And their environments are certainly more controlled than they ever used to be. Now, the end product, yes, is still something you put on your plate. However, the process of getting there, I think, is a much, not to say happier, but more gentle process than perhaps it had been in the past.
Well, farmers face directly what everyone ought to know, and that is the dirty secret of life, that life proceeds by killing and eating other life. And that's true all the way up and down the chain. It is just a fact of life. And farmers know that. They live with that. They know the plants are alive, the animals are alive. And if you want to survive, you have to harvest the animals, harvest the crops, kill the animals, and that keeps you alive.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people seem to have trouble facing up to that.
Well, when the only exposure you have to your food is at the grocery store, yeah, there's no life or death involved in that. You know, it makes it different. I mean, I have two little boys. Well, they're not so little anymore, but they have known from a very early age the simple fact of life, that animals die. You know, it's rule number one of farming. If it's alive, it'll eventually be dead. At some point, everything goes, whether it's the animals, the crops, or, God forbid, the family members. And they understand that we raise these animals for the purpose of selling them for meat, just like we grow crops for the purpose of selling them for food.
I think it wasn't until about, 500 years ago, something like that, that everybody realized that, that everybody was involved in it. But now that food is all packaged, mm-hmm. we're separated from it. We're separated from the soil by concrete. We seem to move further and further away from nature every year. In the cities, we get higher and higher above the earth, and we tend to forget that we are bound to earth. We are of the earth. We're part of it all. And that's easy to overlook, I guess.
That I think, I'm going to just yank us back to the parts of your column that my wife and I like the most. And that part of being close to nature and following the seasons. And, these other things that we've been talking about are important. But what's the best time of year for you?
I'm a fall person. I've always been a fall person, even before I was in agriculture. I just like the temperature and the colors and the smells of the fall. And now even more so because fall is harvest season. So that's when we get, hopefully, to glean the rewards of all of our hard work for the year. I love harvesting. I love that feeling of working together as a family or as a community to bring in the crop. I mean, that's just a wonderful part of agriculture.
Yeah,
and
well, you really do sound close to the land at moments like that when you talk about the crops already. Mm-hmm. But how do you farmers stand being at the mercy of nature?
Got to have a lot of faith.
Yeah, but
I mean, that's the truth. I mean, really, my husband always says the farmer is the eternal optimist. He plants a crop in the spring, and he just has to have faith that there will be a crop to harvest in the fall. And that's kind of how it goes.
But there sometimes isn't.
Correct. There have been years that have been really, really bad where there is negative income. There have been some years, now mind you, they're past now, but there have been years where there has been a really good income when we had $7 corn.
Yeah.
But obviously we have nothing like that anymore. And so the new economics of farming is very different from the economics of $7 corn.
If you had to, if a person got a fellowship to spend a year on a farm, what month would you start her or him out on?
I don't know. That would be a toss-up between the middle of winter and the middle of summer.
Okay.
I don't know. Summer is a nice time of the year because the crops are growing. You can make hay. You have livestock. You know, it's just a nice time to be on the farm. But winter is probably more of the reality. It'll hit you in the face kind of time of year when you're feeding cattle and it's minus 30 and you have to be outdoors doing stuff like that. It's not a whole lot of fun sometimes. I don't know.
Or
just come all year because you can't get the whole experience.
Or in my case, growing up, using the outhouse
well,
in January.
Yeah, thank goodness we've passed that. But I don't know. I don't know that one season could ever truly give you an impression of what it's like
to be on a farm.
You would need a whole year,
right?
Really, to get an idea.
You know, one of the things you hear about farming is that in many situations you borrow money to buy seed, then you plant it, and then if your crop goes haywire, you're stuck. And I remember years ago, I was talking to a farmer. He says, well, if we make it 1 year out of three, we'll be okay. Those ideas make sense to you?
Well, no, I mean, sometimes none of it makes sense, but it is unfortunately the reality in many cases. I don't know any farmers that have enough money in the bank account at the beginning of the year to not have to take out a loan to buy their seed and their fertilizers and their chemicals and feed and everything else. So that's what we have to do. And just like having faith that there's going to be a crop. We have faith that we're going to have enough money to pay it back at the end of the year. It's not always the case, but we hope for the best every time we plant our crop.
Why go into farming if it's tough? I mean, it really is hard work,
mm-hmm.
and you cannot have any guarantee of a weekly or monthly check of anything.
No.
Why do people do that?
I think you do it because it's in your soul. I think, you know, there's what farming means to us as a family is a legacy. You know, my husband, well, my kids are like sixth-generation farmers in Iowa. It's a family legacy. It's what you do. It's the feeling of feeding the world and doing a good thing. Does it make economic sense? No, not always. But I think it has to be in your soul. Just it's like the dirt under your fingernails and the stuff that's ground into your skin. I mean, it's part of you. And I think you either have that or you don't. And the people that don't maybe shouldn't be farmers. The people that do can't imagine doing anything else.
Have you ever thought of doing something more than a column, like a book? Whoa.
Okay. I actually brought it along today. The Quad City Times a couple years ago was kind enough to actually get together this project, and they published a whole lot of my columns. We kind of selected a bunch.
Boy, I missed that.
As well as some of my photos and some old photos from the Quad City Times. And it actually was bound into a book that they sold, which is called Into the Fields. And they were selling a whole lot of them. I had to go do some book signings, and it was advertised in the paper for quite a while. I'm not sure how many copies they have left.
I got my wife's next birthday present.
Yeah, there you go.
How do you get a copy?
You would honestly have to contact the Quad City Times. I'm not sure how many copies they have left in their archives at this point. It's been a couple years now since it was published, but they probably still have some.
Well, I'm sure it'll work better than... I went through a similar thing. I had some of my columns bound into a book and sold by the newspaper. I think there's a storehouse of them.
back when you were in school, there was a writer who lived on a farm and wrote about farms, who was very famous. I think, you know, almost every kid in Minnesota at least knew about him. But I think I haven't heard his name mentioned for 20 years now, Lewis Bromfield. Are you familiar with?
I am not.
His books sound like your columns,
mm-hmm.
particularly the ones where you talk about the passing of the seasons and it's time for a harvest and these are getting ripe and things like
that. Well, you know, the funny thing
is, he's a beautiful writer.
I have people often will tell me, you should write a book. You should write a book, whether they're talking about my work as a veterinarian or they're talking about stuff on the farm. But the funny thing is, you know, writing about what you do every day doesn't seem like it would be interesting to other people in a strange way. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, like this is just life for us. And it doesn't seem like anybody else would be that interested.
Well, we were interested enough to have you here today, and I'm sorry, but we're running out of time.
Uh-oh.
Thank you, Jennifer Ewald, for being our guest today on Scribble. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back for another one next time on Scribble.